The Asian Classics Institute presents The Proof of Future Lives with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in July of 1994. This is the beginning of Class 1.
We'll take a break around 8 o'clock, and I try to stick to, you know, we'll try to make it 15 minutes. You're welcome to come over to the place there. We'll have, you know, some light snacks. If you could bring something when you come, it's fun. You know, I think Nina brought some nice cookies and tempted us. but it's just nice if you bring something. You know, it's up to you, but it's nice if you bring something. Yeah. Do you have some other questions?
Yeah, just after you finish.
Okay.
It turns out that maybe some small administrative responsibilities and one or two slightly interesting financial responsibilities have become ours. And it would be a good idea if we all had a meeting that Michael didn't have to bother with. Maybe for the first 5 minutes, break. And if that, for some reason, doesn't completely call us, maybe it would be nice if we all signed names and phone numbers and we could hook up. And
yeah, by the way, we should start a paper round in case we have to cancel class. I don't have everyone. Okay, Robin will start a petition. Yeah, by the way, we should start a paper round in case we have to cancel classes. Because I don't have everyone. Okay, Robin will start a petition. She has a good pad. Yes?
It's not clear. When does class end?
Okay, it's in your notebook, and I'll cover it right now. I'll pass. Please turn to the first page. If you don't have a notebook, please sit next to someone else. I'm sorry, I thought we did enough, but I'll make about 10 more. By the way, I should thank Marie Plessy from the notebook. And I think she sometimes pays for it. No, you should thank her. On the first page, there's the date there'll be no class. This summer is pretty busy scheduled as far as ceremonies and stuff. So you won't finish until the end of August. But you have a lot of days off. So, if you the last two classes, the 11th class is a review, the 12th class is your final exam. And as you know, I don't mind if anyone wants to take, if you're going overseas or if you're going on a trip or something, if you want to take your final early, I don't care. If you, you know, the review is almost, you know, it's good to come to review, but if you want to take the final the day after the review, I don't care. You'll have all the information by about August 20th. And then it's up to you to, you know, to finish your final. Last class will actually be after the 22nd of August. But that's, I mean, the final. So I don't care if you... I thought to give you about 10 days before the final after the review, because the way it did last course, some people said it wasn't very easy to review by the next class, which was 3 days later. And so it just works out that there's a break there because Rinpoche is having initiation. So it gives you about 7 days to study or 10 days to study for your final. And I don't mind to make an arrangement with you. If you're on a tight schedule as far as your final, I can work on that. So that tells you all the days there will be no class to study for your final. And I don't mind to make an arrangement with you. If you're on a tight schedule as far as your final, I can work on that. So that tells you all the days there will be no class. So please pay attention to it. It's a drag when you come all the way here and just have to see me. What was the other thing? You can turn to the syllabus. It looks like that. And I'll tell you roughly what you're going to study. We're going to study Buddhist logic. The main function of Buddhist logic is to prove things like emptiness, karma, and future lives. And we're going to concentrate on proving future lives and past lives. We're going to concentrate on those proofs. Those come in the second chapter of a book by Dhammakirti that was written about 630 AD. And we'll talk more about it later. But it is a very, very special opportunity. There are only a very few monks reach this subject in their course. You reach this about 2 years or 3 years before your Geshe examination. So there are not many people who can teach it. And there's not many people who can can even read it. So it's a very good chance to read an old argument between the Buddhists and some Hindus who lived 1500 years ago, who said there's no past life. When you die, you just go away. That's it. So live it up this life. You know, and there's nothing else to do. You know, you're going to die. When you die, your mind dies, your whole body dies, your whole self dies, and there's nothing left. So just, what's that? One by the smile. One more time for me.
Why ask why?
Michael, good evening. This is an important question. Now you're making late.
Yes. When you say, well, it would have been done by now. But anyway, were these non-practicing Hindus, or is there some strand of Hinduism?
No, they were a school that didn't accept Krishna or Kashmir. And they had some other beliefs, which we have in our culture. So it's a very good school. It's a very good fight to study. This is a fight that went on 1500 years ago. And the Buddhists tried very hard to give some compelling arguments why you should accept rebirth. And we'll talk. That's the main thing we're going to say. The second class is going to be concentrating on different levels of reality. Why study different levels of reality? Because certain subjects exist in other levels of reality. Emptiness is another level of reality. The laws of karma are on a different level of reality. We cannot perceive them with our normal senses. So you have to study different levels of reality. And we'll get to that. That's the second question. The third class is going to be about the meaning of pramana, and you'll hear a lot about pramana. Pramana is our subject. Class four is about who has pramana, and that ties into how does the Buddha think. We're going to study how does the Buddha think. It's a very interesting subject. It's almost unthinkable to imagine how a Buddha sees the world. And that's what we're going to study in the fourth class. And the fifth class. And for the fifth class, we're also going to talk about beings that are not omniscient. We'll talk about that. Class six is a discussion of how did the Buddha get his knowledge. Because the Buddha didn't start out omniscient. He started out just like us. Totally like us. In fact, a lot of the Kandya, a lot of the scriptures that we have in our temple in New Jersey are devoted to stories of how the Buddha improved himself when he was a lousy person like us. You know, that those are the whole subject of the first 16 volumes of the Kandya. And so we're going to study how did the Buddha do it. Because this is the nice thing about Buddhism. The Buddha teaches from the viewpoint of having been like us. And then he tells what he did to get out of it. Classes 7 through 9 will be the actual proofs for future lives and past lives. And those come from a certain scripture that was written about 1300 years ago. And we'll talk about that. Class 10 is more about different qualities of a Buddha, aside from his omniscience. And then 11 and 12 are your review and your final test. It's not written yet. There's a series of proofs which are passed down by oral tradition. And I've learned them, and I didn't write them down. And I just want him to, I'd rather have him write it out, you know. But there's a very nice series of proofs that are not written down. And so they're passed on by from teacher to student, and nobody's. I don't know where they're written. No. There's a thing that ends in H1. There's a folder that ends in the number on the front ends in H1. And I just want to make sure. Yeah. Every class will start with that. By the way, how many people are getting up every time in the morning? No, I mean keeping their thing from the last.
Oh, yeah.
Course. I don't know.
I had a problem with sleep.
Okay, well, try.
You got H2 or Q1?
There's no H1? We're in trouble.
Oh, boy.
I love you, sure.
You guys get out of here. Oh, I thought you were going. All right, subject you're going to study. You don't have to write the Tibetan, but I put it out just because. So if anybody says, I always tell the story of meeting a Dalai Lama's teacher in a train station, and my teacher was standing next to me. The Dalai Lama's teacher said, "Well, what are you studying?" And I said, and I didn't know the name of his country. And my teacher was very embarrassed. He was standing actually behind the Dalai Lama's teacher. He was like, he was trying to tell me the name of his country. But no, and he says, what are you studying? They say, Tema. They say Tema. The Sanskrit word for Tema is say Pramana.
Pramana.
Most of us say Pramana. Okay. This is one of the great five subjects that a monk must study in the monastery, in the traditional course. You must finish this to get your Geshe degree. It's one of the five great subject. In general, we spend 12 years on the perfection of wisdom. Then we spend 4 years on Majjhimika higher school. We spend 2 years on Vinaya, monks' rules. We spend 2 years on Abhidhamma. And every winter, we take 3 months off and we study Pramana. Pramana is the study of how to prove something. Reason. The word pramana means a correct perception, a normal, unaffected perception. Now, what does that mean? All through the day, all the perceptions you have, all the physical perceptions and all the thoughts you have, are 99% tema. They're all pramana. They're all okay. They're not screwed up. Okay? They're not affected. What does affected mean? You can be affected by alcohol. You can be affected by a drug. You can be affected by an external factor, like when you're in the scripture. It says when you're rowing a boat and it looks like the trees are moving. It looks like the trees are going that way, and not that the boat is going this way. You can be affected by the one I always remember is when I was in a car near my house, and a leaf went across the road in dusk, and it looked like a squirrel. We have squirrels. And I slammed on my brakes. You know, that's not a pramana. Everything else you have during the day is a pramana. Everything else is a tema. And that's pramanas are what make the world for you. Every time you have a pramana, you just created another thing around you. You just saw another thing around you. You validated something. You say, how do you know that exists? I had a pramana towards it. Pramana means I had a perception of something. I wasn't drunk. I wasn't crazy. I wasn't very angry or jealous. You know, sometimes you see something when you're real jealous and it's not there. Or when you're very paranoid at work and you think someone doesn't get you and it turns out they're trying to help you. And you have a strong emotion that ruins your pramana. Pramana means kind of normal perception under normal circumstances, and you have this all the time. That's a very, very important idea, because the definition of existence in Buddhism is backwards. You don't have to write the Tibetan and you don't have to know the Tibetan. You don't even need to know this. But I'd like to plant a seed in your mind. Next life, end up in some Buddhist monastery. It's not in this life. Tenyi means definition. Tibetan goes backwards. Tibetan always starts from the back. Tani means definition. Yurpe means of existence. The definition of existence. The definition of existence in Tibetan is Teme Mikpa. Say Teme Mikpa.
Teme Mikpa.
Teme means by a pramana. What is a pramana, Ariel?
Pramana is a correct perception.
Yeah. A normal, unaffected, correct perception. It's a normal perception. You know, people write books about Tema. They call it valid cognizers. And everyone's wondering, I wonder if I'll ever be able to get a valid cognizer, you know? You have them all day long. You know, you're living called valid cognizers. You know, I don't like all these weird translations. It's just a normal perception. Teme Nipa. Nipa means perceived. Perceived by a normal perception. Perceived by an unaffected, undrunk, uncrazy, unjealous, unangry. You know, just you saw it, therefore what? It exists. And that's the definition of existence in Buddhism. That's how you prove something exists. Yeah.
So how is Mikpa different than Sema?
It's a verb. Okay. Mikpa literally means eyed. The word for eye is Mikpa. Mik. So Mikpa, they made a verb out of the noun. Eyed. Eyed by a Tema. Seen by a Tema. Anything seen by a Tema. Anything seen by a Pramana exists. Okay. And if you don't see it by a Pramana, it doesn't exist. That's it. Kedub J. Who's one of Tsongkhapa's two main disciples, says in his text about this, in the opening lines, he says, you people taking refuge. He's writing 500 years ago, right? Yes. So you Buddhists in Tibet, you're taking refuge. In what? In the Buddha. You have no clue if the Buddha exists. You have no proof. You have no evidence, compelling evidence that you can give me that there is possible a being like you described. Someone who knows all things. Someone who has total compassion. Someone who's watching us all the time in this room, hoping we might meet him, you know. Ready to come at any moment, you know. How can you prove, you know, he's complaining. He's saying that 99% of the Buddhists in Tibet have no inkling of what a Buddha is. They have, if you ask them for three reasons why a Buddha should exist, they can't give it to you. And they say they're taking refuge. By the way, if you don't take refuge, you are
not a Buddhist.
But he's saying if you do take refuge, you probably don't even know what you're taking refuge in. And you probably can't give me three good arguments why it even exists. You know, so you have to have a tema towards the Buddha. Is it possible? Can you get a prana towards the Buddha? Have you ever had a prana towards the Buddha? You can't say he exists if you haven't had a prana towards the Buddha. Have you ever had a prana towards the Buddha?
Sure.
You've not had a direct prana. Unless you truly believe the Dalai Lama is a Buddha or something. I can't remember the chance. So you have not physically seen the Buddha, you know, in the traditional sense. Can you have another kind of prana about it? Is there any other way to establish that a Buddha exists?
Inductive reasoning?
Yeah. Just prove it. Can you prove it? Now we're going to study that. It's not easy. If you got in a good debate with Kedu Jay and you said, I believe in the Buddha, he said, okay, prove it to me. You might have trouble. And it's great. If we can prove it, then you'd be a much better Buddhist. And even if we can't prove, we had a Catholic girls' school at the temple a couple months ago. Georgia Court girls. Silliest girls in New Jersey. And they came in like 30 girls. I said, I'm going to prove future lives to you. And we got the other three marks. And we debated. And, you know, I translated as we went. And at the end of the night, there was no person who would say that they didn't believe that there could be future lives. There was no person who said, I believe there's not future lives. Or that I believe I can prove that there's not future lives. You know, we asked everybody, but anybody still... No, people came up and we proved that thing, and then at the end, everybody said, okay, we believe that it's very possible and that and that we believe that it's probably not possible that they don't exist. You know, that's the way it should be done. And then, you know, like four girls call us afterwards and want to come to class. Great. So that's the way it should be. That's the way you're not allowed in Buddhism to give a proof, which you're not allowed to use a reason in a proof that the other person cannot accept. An argument made to a person who already believes in future lives is not allowed in Buddhist logic. If I try to prove to the Dalai Lama that future life exists, I made a logical error. And if I try to prove to a person with reasons he cannot accept that there are future lives, that's bad logic too, even if they're true. See, that's interesting. If I give you a reason which you're not ready to accept, even if it's true, it's a false logic. You're not allowed to give that logic. A Buddhist monk can throw me out of the debate now. If it's true, but it doesn't relate to your level of understanding, it's a false reason. It's not acceptable. It doesn't prove anything.
But how do you know that the person who's not accepted the logic, I mean, unless you
talk to them.
First.
Oh. You get down to their level of experience. You relate to them. You must use reasons that come from their world. And if you, even if you give a good reason, which is not in their world, it's bad logic, and it's thrown out of Buddhist. You're thrown out of the Buddhist. You're not allowed to give this reason, even if it's true. That's beautiful. Right? That's one of the principles of debating and the Buddhist logic. So anyway. Yeah, different thing means the definition of existence.
What's the whole thing?
The definition of existence is that thing which is perceived with a prana. Any object which is perceived by a prana. Prana meaning a perception which you have. You're not drunk, you're not crazy, you're not very angry, you're not jealous. Just normal. Like all the subjects in Buddhism, in the monastery, all the great schools of ancient India, they come down to us in a big long chain. If that chain ever gets broken, if you do not have students, that will finish in the world. That's very important. That chain has been going on for 2,500 years. There's always been someone to teach the next generation. You know, if you don't learn the principles of what we're going through, and if you don't pass it on to other people, you might be the people who break the chain. That's a very big responsibility. That'd be a very terrible thing. You really have to grasp enough of it to pass it on to the next line in the chain. So I'm going to show you how the chain came to us. We have a direct, unbroken chain of these teachings, orally, and through debate, and through certain writings. And there have been schools that are lost. The Sakyas had a great logic tradition. Sakyapanda says one of his greatest works is on logic. They've lost their logic tradition. There are only two people in India who can explain it. They're very old, they can't teach very much now. That chain has pretty well been broken. The Kagyus were fantastic debaters. The Kagyus used to be great logicians. That chain's pretty much broken now. So it's up to you, it's really up to you guys. We have a nice strong Galupa logic chain. It's not actually that strong. It's actually right now in pretty bad danger because the books were destroyed in Tibet, a lot of the books were destroyed. We're still looking for some of them. And I'll talk more about it. But it's a big responsibility. You have to know the chain, and now you're the next link. And it's a big responsibility. So I'm going to... Brian, did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what Sema means. I thought Ma is a negative.
No, sometimes it's feminine, and sometimes it's just the second part of any noun. You know, it doesn't mean anything to do with feminine or negative. It's just the second part of a two-part word. By itself, it has no meaning. All Tibetan words, the root of a Tibetan word is in the first syllable usually. The second syllable is usually suffix. Okay? So don't worry about it. The ma doesn't mean anything.
So does tema mean pramana?
Yeah. Tema is the Tibetan word, and pramana is the Sanskrit word. The English is normal, unscrewed up perception. And you have them all day long. And that's a very basic thing, and I swear, most people never get it. you know, they study logic, they study geometry for a year, and they never realize they study semas all day. But sema is important because it's establishing what?
Reality.
Reality, truth. If you don't have sema, if you don't know what's a sema, you don't know if something's true or not. You don't know if you should believe in something. You have a nice, lucky attraction to Buddhism. You don't know if there's a future. You don't even know if it exists. You have to try to establish those things. Then there won't be any more Buddhism because you like to be a Buddhist. You have to be Buddhism because you damn well better be a Buddhist because you're in trouble for your next life. You know, it'll be a little bit different after that. You'll actually understand why you have to do all this stuff. You have no choice. Yeah.
Pramana go through for all kinds of accurate perceptions or merely for perceiving things the way they normally appear to be?
All kinds.
All
we'll talk more about it. There's a yogic direct perception. The perception of shunyata directly in meditation is a very special category of sema. It's way up over here. We'll go through it. We have a chart here. It's kind of nice. I collected it for the first time on KJ and nice. Okay.
Translate it?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to teach you, we're going to take a break in about 3 minutes. I'm going to give you the main book we're going to be studying. Don't forget you have to read that backwards, right? You're going to be studying, say, Tema Namja.
Tema Namja.
Tema Namja. Okay. Tema Namja in Sanskrit, which you don't have to know, is Pramanavartika. It's the text which is used in all Buddhist monasteries since, you know, India for the study of logic, Buddhist logic. It was written by, you're not supposed to call a lama by his raw name. You're not supposed to say, hey, Lhasa Thakse. You're supposed to say Master Dharmakirti, Acharya Dharmakirti, Dharma Maharaj. Okay. Don't getting confused with who. Do you know any other kirtis?
Chandrakirti.
People always get confused. Great scholars, you know, embarrass themselves in magazines by slipping. You know, I've seen it. This is Dharmakirti, not Chandrakirti. Chandrakirti lived about 100 years after that, and he wrote the basic text for Madhyamika or Emptiness. Dharmakirti was the great logician. You don't have to know it, but he belonged to what we call the South Transit which is the second of the great four schools. And he had a good dose of mind-only school.
When you say he was part of that Svatantrika school, does that mean it pretty much everything?
By the way, there's a Svatantrika school. There's a South Tantrika school.
Which one was
he? He was part of the South
Tantrika.
People get that mixed up. I did for years.
Does that mean that pretty much everything he did is Svatantrika?
His famous work, for which he's famous, and he wrote a logic work. Was written from that viewpoint. We say you can't reach enlightenment or nirvana unless you become a Madhyamika Prasangika. So we say he was really a Madhyamika Prasangika in sheep's clothing. And you know, that's a viewpoint. But that's a long story. We'll do it someday. So his name is Dharmakirti. He lived 630 AD. I'll do one more thing. You've got 2 more minutes. Why'd you put that clock up on me? It's what I call the onion skin theory. We'll talk more about it. Onion peel? The correct perception that Dharmakirti was talking about, the correct perception that he wrote his commentary about, wasn't the one in your mind. It was a book called Correct Perception. And that was written by, that was this book. And this is a book that was written 2 generations earlier by Dignaga, Master Dignaga. Compendium on Correct Perception. Compendium means like he collected all the things that the Buddha said about it and put them in one place.
Like collection.
It's like a collection. So Dignaga, Master Dignaga, there's a big debate, you know, when did he live? We don't know who these guys were. We don't know anything about them. We know very, very little. They are lost in history. We don't know the names of the great kings, and, you know, there's debates. They live 1,000 years after the ascension of Vishnu. They argue about it. We don't really know much. There's a few old histories, but they're mostly, you know, very difficult. So we don't really know. Tibetans say maybe Dharmakirti was his direct student. Maybe there was somebody named Vishwana Sena between them. We don't really know. It doesn't really matter. Study their books. Dialogue is always saying that. Not so important that we know, you know, who his brother was. The book speaks for itself. You could have called it by anyone. But anyway, Dharmakirti is explaining Dignaga's book. Because in between there, some non-Buddhists attacked the book. And Dharmakirti's big job is to explain Master Dignaga. He's trying to explain what Dignaga meant. And Dignaga is the great founder of Buddhist logic systems. He's the ultimate source for all our studies of logic. Okay, we'll take a break. If you come back in 15 minutes, I can almost finish on time. If you take longer, it's not my fault.
What is Choklong?
What's that?
Choklong?
Choklong is his Tibetan name. Oh. They translated the parts of his name, like Stillwell. They wouldn't call you Stillwell, but they would call you Quiet Water. You see what I mean? They would make a new name. That's what it's good. You see, you come to the house, have some whatever we got.
Wow.
You can't understand.
How?
Well, I'll tell you about it later. I'll first, I'll write it. What is part of me? Part means freedom, and it's a synonym for Nirvana. Par means freedom. Lam, you know.
Path.
Par Lam means path to freedom. Sel J means light. Light. Sel J means light. Literally, it means clear maker. Sel means clear, J means maker. And that's what a lantern does. So you think of a dark night out in Arizona, no electricity for 50 miles. It's very dark. And you can tell yourself it's too deep. And to have a lantern is very nice. So this is like a lantern on the dark path. This is very beautiful. A lantern, a light for the path of freedom. That's a commentary by Galtapia. By the way, tonight's the boring part. I mean, more boring than usual. Because we're just doing both. We'll get into it. Camera next week. Next time. All right, no class on Monday, right? That's a hard Thursday. Hard Thursday, that day. We have to go to test on the bed, so it takes a couple hours. Okay, Delta D. He was the number one disciple of Tsongkhapa. He's always on the right side, on Tsongkhapa's side, in any picture of Tsongkhapa. You can always see him there.
Speaking of Tsongkhapa?
Yeah, he was the number one student. Gyaltsev actually means regent, because he took over the throne of Tsongkhapa after Tsongkhapa passed. So he was the first holder of the throne of Tsongkhapa. Who's Tsongkhapa, if you don't know? Born 1357, died 1419. Wrote 10,000 pages of Buddhist commentary on every scripture, every major scripture. It's almost impossible within one lifetime. We believe he was just taking transcription from Manjushri. We believe he was in direct contact with Manjushri. And you cannot read Gyaltsev, who's under Tsongkhapa, who's his student. You cannot read, in the monastery we read about one paragraph a day. We debate it for about 6 hours. You can debate a page of normal English stuff in about 10 minutes. Extremely difficult, extremely deep thinker. So Tsongkhapa's is more important. He's deeper. So how he wrote it, we don't even imagine. But Those books in the house over there are his collecting work. Incredible. You know, Professor Turbin is very, I almost said extinguished, but he's very distinguished. He's a distinguished scholar. In his life, he's been able to translate 100 pages into a book. You know, that's about where it's at. So that's Gelson Dick. Very fantastic work. Extremely difficult to read. We can't read it. So we have to study. Same on me, front. Normal, unaffected, unscrewed out perception. Have a great transition. Om means the thought behind something. You know, when my boss says the cow got skinny, what's his goal by? No bonuses this year. Okay. He got up and gave that lecture on time. Gomba means the thought behind something. Gen means it's Alamkara in Sanskrit. It means a jewel. Alamkara. So we translate this. I was responsible for editing this book. It's Jewel of the True Thought. And this scholar has written. He's in Tibet. He's the head of the Buddhist Association of Tibet, Tibetan Dharma. And he's in charge of the Normal Inca Palace. And he's an incredible scholar. And he wrote this book twice. It was burned the first time by the Cultural Revolution. Second time it was snuck out in a laundry bag. And he's a genius. And there's only one man who was able to write any commentary in the 20th century on this subject. He's a genius. And his student is my teacher. I'm a student of his student, of his main disciple. So you're now in that lineage. And he wrote a commentary to the whole Temananda, the first person to do it in I don't know how long. And it's incredible. And it's very easy to read. So we're going to study that. We're going to study excerpts from that.
The Light for the Path to Freedom, is that a commentary?
It's the Onion Theory. He's commentating on him. It's too difficult for people to read by about 700 years later, so he writes a commentary. And after another 700 years, we need another commentary. It goes like that in Buddhism.
So the light on the
path... every 500 years, you need a new commentary.
So the Light on the Path to Freedom is a commentary on the Compendium of Correct Perception?
Yeah. And actually, there's many commentaries between them. I didn't want to overburden you. That's the lineage of commentaries. You cannot read this. It's in code. It's for memorizing. You memorize it. It doesn't make any sense at all. You can't understand it. Okay. That's a typical example of a first in code. And then he breaks the code for you. And he breaks his code and he breaks his code. You can't go to the original books. You have to go backwards through history. And it's very beautiful. So you're going to get a really nice commentary. That's just the book has just recently been printed in Tibet. And in fact, the second half hasn't even been printed yet. It's ready.
Michael, we often do this in class. We would trace the lineage of a text back many generations like this. Are you saying that it's because there's a degeneration of understanding? Or because it's more colloquial for the period of the time?
I think both. And we just don't have time. We're not devoting our lives to this geometry. He probably sat down, he didn't have it written down. He memorized the Buddha. Then he had an oral explanation. He memorized that. And we don't do that. We keep working on that. Okay, you have to know that, all right? That's the onion skin. You need to go back. There's two. Now, when kids start Buddhist logic in the monastery, they're when they're 13. First subject you study. After you learn to read and write, you have to study. They have to have a textbook to use. These are too tough. So two textbooks have come out of the monastery. I'm going to write their names. It's a different homework question. Okay? And you should know this. So I'm going to,
I'm sorry, I lost it on the commentaries. The Light for the Path to Freedom is a commentary on...
on the one before it.
The compendium or the commentary of correct perception?
No, on the commentary. If you go back again.
The compendium is first.
Jesse Wangzuk is writing on Gyaltsa Te. Gyaltsa Te is writing on Dharma
Okay.
Shri. And you should know it. They're more important than your grandparents. Your grandparents gave you a body. These people are giving you your spirit. These people are giving you the knowledge that you will live by. They're more dear to you than your grandparents. You should know their names. You shouldn't just think they're some dusty old book that somebody wrote. They are more kind to you than your grandparents. They're giving you a way out of suffering. And you should at least know their names. Like your grandparents. In the monastery, we have to memorize the name of every single lama back to the beginning of our monastery, who was in charge of the debate ground. And we recite it. Every Tuesday night, we stop and we pray for like 3 hours to thank them. So it's a very holy thing. Well, you mean like that? This is earliest and next. All right, now I'll give you this a different question, different point. These are two kids' books that are written so that young people can study logic in the monastery.
What about
it took me 8 years to get to the point where I could study it. And I didn't do anything wrong. Okay, Dura means collective topics. It means collective topics. I think the next course that you do on this subject, Sema, will be from the Dura. And most people would have started you from the Dura. But I think it's important that Westerners learn the arguments for future lives before we die. I mean, you might die before. Seriously. You've got to study most important things. Dura, I'm going to give you three subjects from the Dura. Say, Tenzin.
Tenzin
means how do you define something? What's the definition of definition? And it's very important. We operate by definition. You need it for clarity. You need it for accuracy. You need to know what you're talking about. I met a guy today. He wrote a book on Prajnaparamita. I didn't want to embarrass him and ask him what's the definition of Prajnaparamita. What is its basic description? What is it? And it's very precise. It's the perception of shunyata under the influence of Bodhisattva. But I very much doubt that you can find five people in New York who can say that. But everybody talks about Prajnaparamita. This is the beauty of definition. You need the definition. You need to understand definition. That's the first subject in the Dura. Dura has about 15, 20. I'm only giving you three. Your next one is...
Three.
This is an author. It's a good question. It's a very good question. You rarely see it. It's a special spelling thing. Don't worry about it. Say Shiru is the outline of existing objects. Outline of existing things.
Outline as in
visual outline? Outline as in this is A, B, C, this is 1, 2, 3. Now imagine this. In 2 pages, a complete breakdown of all existing objects. It's incredible.
It's a page view.
Is it generic?
Yeah, it's categories of existence. It takes the Abhidharma on about 500 pages. These are the two kinds of existing objects. This one breaks down into two, this one breaks down into three, these three have these categories, these four have these categories. And by the time you finish 2 pages, you've covered every object existing in the universe. And it's a beautiful subject. It's really a fantastic subject.
How to define something.
That's an explanation of what definition is. Yeah. One of the rules of defining something. Because in Buddhism, if you don't know, you don't know it.
What is definition?
Excuse me?
What is definition?
Right. What are the rules for the scientific side? Are we going to study all these subjects? Not in this course. I just want you to know the literature. I want you to know that these are your, this is your family tree. You should know it. Okay. Say chi.
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 Chi. Chi. Chi.
Chi.
Chi.
Chi.
Chi. Chi. Chi. Chi. Chi means a general in the sense of car. Chidak means a specific in the sense of Chevrolet. Now you translate. I don't know. The study of generals and specifics, the study of
things, models.
Classes and subclasses.
Classes. I don't care what you call it. You call it generals, I don't care. It's the study of how do you make a mental image and how do you... It's like Jung's archetype and Aristotle. It's a fantastic study. In fact, if you study this subject, which is like car and Chevrolet, okay? If you study that subject with a good, if you're serious and you meditate carefully, it can lead you to a direct perception of emptiness. That particular subject could trigger what your goal is. And once you perceive emptiness directly, you're on your way out. You have 7 lifetimes to go or whatever. That's why they call it stream entry. You will not suffer more. You will see your future lives. You will know the nature of those lives. You won't have a bad future life anymore. You'll have a nice future life. You will be born into a kind of earth that you'll always be able to have good teachers. You will always be comfortable. You will always be studying these subjects. You'll never forget what emptiness is. If everything is set after that, you perceive directly. And you perceive your future lives directly.
Wow.
And this can trigger. This, if you study this carefully, it can trigger. Not this. True future life. That's why this study of Buddhist, I call it Buddhist logic and perception, is called the key to Marjanika. They say that you cannot understand emptiness without a good understanding. I always tell the story of Geshe Dalton. Who was that? Who is that? Where was he? Where is he now?
He's
dead. No, her when she was a kid, her first teacher, old Mongolian Geshe, great master, very wise. On his deathbed, I went to his room. He's got the dura in his hand. He's studying 13-year-old logic, what she studied when she's 12. I said, you know, Geshe-la, shouldn't you have some tantric manual in your hand? No, I want a diamond. I want this to be what I carry. This is the key to everything. It's very important. And he died 2 days later. That's what he chose to have in his life. So it's something wonderful. Logic is not, Buddhist logic is for the purpose of achieving nirvana. Well, you think maybe you don't remember. No, not very well. You guys can do it. Okay, one more book name, and then you're out of all of this. This is another kind of book. Now we're not talking about this anymore. Tagrik is the study of formal logic. How do you make a reason? This is this because this. Okay? Formal logic. What is a good reason? What makes a good reason? You're not going to study this. Okay? You have to study this before you can enter the debate ground in the monastery. When you pass this subject, you're allowed to go into debate. It's usually at age 15. She studied it when she was a kid. We got a grant from the federal government, and we had about 8 kids learn it in conjunction with the local school system now. And it was great. We did a book. It was the Youth Grant of the Year. She was lucky to go to Washington, D.C. Never went. We found out she was going to college. Long story. But it's the study of reasoning. You're not going to do it. We're going to go straight to what they use it for, which is the good word. Kishalai. Okay, one more thing. His life story and the background of this subject is in your notebook. It's from the English introduction to his book.
Okay.
This book was written in Japan. Yes, you won't. His life story is very inspiring. He was imprisoned by the Chinese. He was badly injured. His books were burned. And then how he got through it and what he's doing now is great. So that's in your reading. The other reading you have is from the core of the onion. What's the core of the onion? Like if you got through his book, and then you could read Yao Zi, and then you could read Dharmakirti, and then you could read Vijnana, would there be anywhere to go from that?
The Buddha.
Did the Buddha teach logic? Yes.
Did he write?
The Buddha never wrote anything. He's written down part of his book. He's like Jesus. He wrote logic. And the classic, this is your second reading, and you must read it and you have to memorize it. His classic statement on why you need logic is Buddha. Which means the reason you need logic is that any one person, without being able to read another person's mind perfectly, judges that person, he'll go to hell. He'll fail. If one person, it's in your reading, judges another person without being able to read his mind perfectly, he will fall. What he means fall is he's referring to an actual incident that happened where somebody went to hell. And it doesn't have to be go to hell, but you can think of it as collective extremely bad karma by judging another person. Somebody in the other class asked, does that mean that we should just give up trying to correct other people, or should we just never pay attention if it's about the things that kill people? No. You must resist evil. And in fact, if you took the initiation last weekend, that's one of your vows. You're now required to resist evil in your world. Protect people from harm. But, you have to be extremely careful not to judge. You cannot judge them. You cannot read their mind. He says, rather run down on my inba, kazaki, so on the chat, and you're your side. Unless you are a Buddha or close to it, don't try. You don't know who around you is a bodhisattva. Anyone in this room could be a bodhisattva. You could be all be a bodhisattva. I'm not. I don't know who's a bodhisattva in this room. And I can't judge. I should not judge you. And Kingyuk Jay, who the other great student of Tsongkhapa, says, look, just go to your room, perfect your own knowledge, worry about your own faults, clean out your own mind, clean out your own actions, keep your own vows, which are many, and don't worry about other people. You know, I mean, if someone's mugging someone, hell. But do not judge other people. Do not spend your time judging other people. And the Buddha tells a story, and that's the source of Buddhist logic. The Buddha tells that story and then goes into Buddhist logic. He begins to explain the methods for perceiving things that you can't see with your eyeballs. And that's where Buddhist logic comes from. And that's the ultimate story of Buddhist logic. And that's the purpose of Buddhist logic is to keep us out of hell and get us to move on.
Yeah, but how do you reconcile the fact that if you see if somebody's hurting somebody else, you acknowledge that. Isn't that judgment also?
Yeah, it is a judgment that you should stop the harm. But you... In a case of extreme violence, you can think that the person is probably having some evil thought, but you can't even be sure about that. But I'm not talking about that. I mean, what I'm talking about mainly is the people around you that you know who they are in your office or in your family, or in your relatives, and you're judging them, and you have no basis. You two cannot meet their mind. They could be a bodhisattva, they could be doing something for very high reasons that we can't imagine. And the Buddha calls it a medon. Medon is a special kind of barbecue pit in India, where you have burning embers for 12 feet down, and it's covered by a very innocent looking powder, you know, ash powder. So it looks, you know, looks like no problem. It doesn't look dangerous. He calls it a medon. It looks like you could mess around with it and not get hurt. But if you take that step, you burn. And you burn badly. You fall into a deep pit of embers, burning embers. He says, don't touch it. Stay away from it. Be careful. Judging other people is very, very dangerous. You will hurt yourself. He's adamant about it. And that's where Buddhist body started. That's the quotation. I've taken the quotation out of the sutra. By the way, who brought us the sutra is Ajisha. Ajisha quotes the sutra. It's in the Congress. The sutra is still there. You can find the original sutra in the Kangyur, and you can find it in the Tengger because Adisha uses it.
You're talking about the original sutra that
Buddha's
Master Jinapa.
One of the ones he was commenting on. One of the ones he was using to write his book. And that sutra has a short, it's about 5 pages long, that section. And that's what the students in the other class are going to be translating for you guys. And that's the part that you're going to have to edit. And it's very exciting. When you get to the end of it, by the end of this course, something very interesting will happen. And I'm saving it. So you're going to get it in installments. You know, the first one's coming from Eric Colombo. And then Serge is going to do a page, and then Ernst is going to do a page. Yeah.
Michael, when you say Atisha brought us the sutra, you mean we have all the sutras. It's just that his reference to it has made it flow through all these documents.
Yeah.
That it,
yeah, he wrote a book called Tokuna Tsubo. He collected major important incidents from sutras and wrote a book. But it happens to be that that particular sutra still exists. Some of the other sutras in his book don't still exist. So he lived 900 years ago. And he's lost it. So you can find it in two places. You can go to the Kangyur, which is in New Jersey. You can go to Ajisha's book, which is in the computer already. That's how I found it. No one's ever found it. That's the benefit.
You have to judge the situation.
You have to judge the situation in order to act with compassion and your dharma responsibility. But be aware, and you know it, and I don't have to tell you. You don't know his real thoughts. You don't know what he's really thinking. And when someone seems to do something harmful to you, or you absolutely can't judge. You don't know.
What if
it tells
you?
No, people say lots of things. The Buddha. Don't judge. Don't worry about it. We got all these problems in ourselves. We got all these things.
But I'm not talking about in terms of putting down someone. But I mean, I'm talking about in terms of you keeping your vows and in terms
of
saying, I want to associate with these people because these
are you saying in terms of determining decisively that this is a bad person?
I'm talking
in terms of deciding that he has bad, certain evil thoughts. Can you decide that? And what I'm saying is obviously not, but it takes a lot of Buddhist training to figure it out. It doesn't take more than a few minutes to figure it out, but you got to get used to it. You got to get used to staying away from what? The barbecue pit. It looks innocent. It looks like, hey, you know, you can badmouth anybody. But it's very poor. The karma that you collect by that. Let me see if there's anything here you can get. What did Gyaltsa Sensei say about logic? He said, Gyaltsa J is who? Number one disciple of Tsongkhapa. On his right hand side. He said the kindest thing that Tsongkhapa ever did to him was teaching logic. And before Gyaltsa J met Tsongkhapa. More homework? We might be short, because we were short long. sorry. Yalta J was the most famous logician in Tibet before he met Tsongkhapa. He was already a great man before he met Tsongkhapa. He went to Tsongkhapa's lecture to embarrass Tsongkhapa. And he went to a lecture to challenge Tsongkhapa and to defeat him in public. And by the end of the lecture, he was a student of Tsongkhapa. And he prostrated himself and he became a student. And he said the kindest thing that Tsongkhapa ever did was to teach him. You know, Tsongkhapa taught him all the tantras, taught him Rajini, taught him the biggest kindness, the biggest kind thing that Tsongkhapa ever did was to teach him. And we'll see our.
Can I ask a priori question going back to the end? Have we kind of wrapped this up?
We're going to wrap up. We're going to finish now in 3 minutes.
Oh, 15 minutes. Oh, go ahead. Well, ever since you said that the first word of the class, se ma or ma, I don't think I understand what normal perception is. Aren't there millions of ways of normal perception?
Yeah, billions. Yeah.
Oh, so there's no normal perception. There's just a zillion versions. Okay.
Now, in its ultimate sense, is that correct?
Probably
not. Very difficult question. That's one of them. That's about it.
Chantrika is spelled exactly the way it sounds.
Spelled Chantrika?
The school that...
That we're studying?
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have to know this, but this is for her question.
That's the idea.
It comes from the word sutra. And in Sanskrit, when you strengthen the vowel, it becomes al. Al. So it becomes Salvatran, which means a follower of sutras.
I don't know if it's okay to ask this, but I don't get question number 4 in your homework. You know, you said two types of books used in the monastery. Is it the same
as... Number 4 is the two books I wrote, and these are the three.
So why are they types of books? I mean, I thought that was the name of a book. You're saying it's a type of book?
Yeah, I'm just giving the name of the book.
But you read only one book, it's 2 books
or more. Doctor, the second book. Don't make me do your homework. By the way, I have a request. Question about your homework. Call each other. First. Sometimes I didn't cover it, and I know I get 12 phone calls. But I'm crazy. If I don't get some sleep, I'll get worse. So, when you have a question, work with each other first. You know, don't call me. Sometimes you call me, my boss is sitting there in the room. It's a little touchy. And even when he's not in the room, it's sort of bad. Not to work.
So you mean logic to two things you cannot see, or not to be judgmental?
It's the same thing.
Everything.
Okay, go ahead.
Vasi bhuti nuse metokam Vrejavichi nide gyanvati Pange chintu mikte luvati Chokotun nanda shingla chaparasho Enyam guru radham adakam niratayami Gyanvati
two more things. The purpose of logic ultimately is to perceive emptiness, karma, the fact that we exist, the fact that we run it, to prove that those things. And by the end of this course, hopefully, you'll have a better insight, I would say, than any other Westerner has ever had been exposed to these particular groups. Will you, by the end of the class, totally believe that there's a future life? I don't think so, only on the basis of the class. but I think you'll have the tools to perceive it yourself. That I can give you. And if you work on it, you will see the future. That's great. You can do that. So that's the goal of that. Second thing, Ken Rinpoche, who's our group member.
This is the end of Class 1.